I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So here we are with another episode of the Proper Mental Podcast, and I'm joined this week once again by Chris and Stu from Hardcore Listing. How are you, fellas?
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, mate.
Yeah, really good. Thanks, mate.
Good, good. Welcome back. You guys are my first ever repeat guests. There you go.
Really?
Yeah, first
We're
time.
We're honoured.
Oh. Did you not learn from the first one?
There's a lot to dig into with me.
Yeah, thought of trying that. I wanted to do a better job second time round. That's what it was. Yeah.
Or is it that you've had a lot of very deep and highbrow conversations over the last year and you just needed a couple of idiots that just talk shit?
Bit of comic relief, yeah. That's what we needed, yeah. So I suppose, yeah, I better add a bit of context for anyone that is listening to why we're doing this mashup. But it's November, which is Men's Mental Health Awareness Month. And somewhere in November, I can't quite remember the date, is International Men's Day too. So I wanted to kind of mark that in some way and do something a little bit, I suppose something a bit blokey, really. Mm. And rather than just do a standard interview episode, to maybe more demonstrate blokes just having a chat about maybe some mental health stuff or some other stuff, because that's the kind of stuff that men always get told that they can't do, but I think that men can, you know. I think that's a bit of a myth, really. So yeah, I got in touch with you guys mainly because I don't have a budget at all for this, but also because the top five format that you use for Hardcore Listings, I think, is such a interesting way of opening up different lines of communication. There's so many times I've listened to you guys and there's something I thought was going to be maybe a bit daft, and it's ended up being quite serious, but in a really lovely way. And the opposite of that is true in a lovely way as well. So, I mean, I suppose that's before we get into it, that's a good place to start. But were you surprised once you started getting into this podcasting lark, how these top fives opened up like different areas of conversation?
I guess we didn't have a huge expectation, Tom, and I don't speak on behalf of Stuart. The idea was to have a deep dive and for it to not be very originally, a deep dive into someone's passion into their top five. So it wasn't so clickbaity like you'd find on one of these things that you scroll past on Facebook. But it changed in so many different ways. In sometimes it's quite deep, in other ways it's frivolous and stupid. But I guess what I was quite surprised at is how quickly we can go from frivolous and stupid into something really intense, and how it feels kind of effortless with it. And I guess that's because we don't have a massive agenda with the people that, you know, that we're chatting to. So we're not trying to dig anything out of them, and I think we're quite laid back. And I think in that way, conversation, if everyone feels comfortable, people tend to open up more anyway. And I think the fact that we can, I think levity is really important. And I think the fact that we can, because we're hysterical and really witty and funny, I think that's what gets our guests to open up a little bit. And that there's that levity there. Obviously, we're none of those things. We're stupid, but it tends to work. So yeah, that's what I'd say. I was surprised at how quickly we can go between deep and stupid quite quickly. Yeah. Stu, what's your thoughts, mate?
Yeah, it pretty much echo what you've just said, to be honest, Chris. I think when we set it up, you know, the podcast was born out of a couple of appearances on Scroobius Pip's Drunkcast, and we decided we'd have a crack at it ourselves. And I think because Pip's audience knew who we were through them episodes, but all they were getting was the sort of drunk versions of us, when we set out to do our Hardcore Listing, you know, the jingle that we still have today, you know, we'll say it's a drunken soiree at the Whiff Inn, which is the little bar shed I've got at the end of my garden. And we were drinking in those early episodes. We were talking to you before we pressed record, Tom, about one of the ones that we done early on that never come out because it was just such a mess. And I think what happened was, I think as the podcast sort of grew, we knew that we couldn't sustain getting drunk every week just to have a conversation. And
have liver disease.
And thankfully, yeah, we're still alive 5 years down the line. And the possibilities of top fives are endless, and it's not too taxing on the guests, and it's not too taxing on the preparation our side as well. It's pretty, you know, what Chris and I think of our friendship has really grown through the podcast, and we understand each other a lot better than we did, to the point where we know that even if we've just got five little notes in front of us, we can talk for hours about that, and we can kind of set each other up for little jokes because we know just through repetition and time spent doing this that we kind of know how each other works. So it's been really nice on that side of things as well.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just going to, because we made such a fuss over clapping for that audio, I haven't recorded the video, so give me a second. There we go. Right, that's better. So, yeah, that was a great way to start, wasn't it? And, no one can watch it, but there you go.
Well, hello, video people. We've just started.
Gang, you missed 5 minutes.
Yeah, the best 5 minutes of the whole thing.
Tough shit.
Yeah. We've just put all our clothes back on.
But that's really interesting to me, actually, because, like, there is this thing about men not being able to talk about mental health. And I do think that's not quite true. You know, I think sometimes men lack the vocabulary or the safe spaces or the people to talk to. But also it's not necessarily men are going to sit down and maybe get straight into it off the bat. But quite often they will segue into it off a something else, off a chat about their favorite TV show or their favorite band or something like that. That I think it just demonstrates that maybe men are better at talking about this stuff than we give them credit for, and maybe constantly telling men that they don't talk is sort of doing them a disservice, really.
Yeah, I think maybe we've spoken on previous podcasts, like our friendship groups, we're all right at talking about mental health now. I'm really fortunate for that. I'm not saying that was always the case. But I also think that thing about vocabulary is really interesting, Tom, because it's really difficult to articulate your feelings sometimes. And actually music, like what this top five is going to be about, is sometimes a way of, you know, even it doesn't even mean that the lyrics of a song need to absolutely nail on how you're feeling. But if the emotion in that is resonating with you, a frustration or a misery or a sadness or whatever, then the words don't need to perfectly align to your circumstances for you to interpret in a way that helps you deal with the pain that you're going through. Vocabulary is an interesting one. But I don't know. Like, I don't always know how to express how I'm feeling to my partner or my mates. But I can let them know I'm feeling down. I don't have a problem with that as much.
Yeah, I suppose getting the ball rolling is the hardest thing, right? Starting that conversation. So anyway, that takes us nicely. What top five are you guys going to do with me today?
Well, this is interesting about planning and preparation, because when we've discussed this, we're going to do top five like songs about mental health or songs that we've used in and around mental health. Now, in terms of order and structure, this could be quite chaotic, Tom, because I don't think me and Shu have got an agreed top five here, do we?
No.
I'm not going for
Limp Bizkit break stuff. So,
I've just got that five times.
There you go, job done. That's actually really interesting because
we have listed. I've got a bunch.
Yeah, got a load of stuff to talk about. It was interesting for me going into this conversation, I think, because I know you guys a little bit as well. But normally, my way of kind of trying to manage my anxiety and something that I'm trying to get better at. So I don't necessarily feel anxious. My behavior takes over and I try and control all the controllables, right? I'm an overthinker. I'm a planner. I'm a control freak. I make notes on everything. And I can sometimes with my podcast, I'd be a little bit overprepared even, you know, which sometimes tanks an episode, I feel. But So it was really good practice for me to go into this today because we swapped a couple of emails. We didn't really make much of a plan. I haven't written a single thing down, and that's unheard of for me. So this is actually really good. My therapist is going to be patting me on the back next time I see her. So it's actually really good.
Just allow the chaos to happen. Exactly. But I guess as well with that, mate, is I know what you mean. Like if you're when you over prep for something as well, you can, you know, you're so desperate to get something in or make a point that you've read, like you might not really be 100%. I've done this where I'm not 100% engaged with the other person, or, you know, I want it to go a certain way. I've done it. I've been on quite a lot of podcasts recently about film, and I have like ridiculously over prepared for them. Like I did one about The Crow, Just Films and that. Shout out to Josh and Alex. It was fucking excellent. But I had so much to write. And even after the podcast, and I bored them to tears for like well over an hour, and I was saying to Molly, oh, I missed this, I missed that. It's like, hold on, didn't you enjoy it? I was like, yeah, so just relax. You didn't get to say everything you wanted to say, but it's fine. So Shu, in terms of this, mate, what do you want to do? Should we just like alternate between songs and stuff like that? Because well, yeah. How I've done it is just I've got a bunch of songs that either have a meaning specifically geared towards mental health, or songs that I've used as a means to process my own mental health. Yeah. I don't know about you, mate. I don't know how you've sort of like...
Yeah, absolutely. And I should say that as this is a mash-up podcast, it seems crazy not to for me to release this to the off the beaten track audience, because the second question I always ask all my guests is, what was the first song that affected you emotionally? And that is the question that, however tough it is getting a guest to relax, that's the question that opens the floodgates, that opens the conversation up. And so...
Is it always, don't they, it doesn't every guest always answer the same, Vengabus?
Yes. And yeah. We all have a laugh, and then it just breaks the ice. And then we just discuss the other chart hits of seminal pop act, the Venga Boys. But yeah, so, you know, music as it is for Chris, and I'm sure, you know, yourself, Tom, and most people that are listening to this, it's, you know, a key part of you know, your life. And, you know, Chris and I have come from, you know, musical backgrounds, whether that be DJing, bands, you know, producing music, whatever, like, and so, you know, questions like this to actually pick them songs. I've leaned towards songs that I've got two kind of takes on it. That I've got a couple that lift me out of feeling shit, and I've got three that kind of give me a hug when I'm feeling shit, and it soundtracks that feeling shit and kind of is part of the process of acknowledging it's all a bit shit at the moment.
Oh mate, yeah, that sounds lovely. Should we jump in with one of those then, Stu?
Okay. So bizarrely, I've had a strange week this week, and it's the first time I've sort of spoke to Chris, and he's been checking in on me. Bless him. He's been really kind of him, but I've had a bit of a wonky week, and so this kind of come along at the right time. This conversation, and a song that I can't stop listening to at the moment. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. It's a very early track by the Bee Gees, and it's called I Started a Joke. And I've literally just got goosebumps there. Wow. As I've just said the title of the song. It was covered by Faith No More in the late 90s, maybe early 2000s. And it's Robin Gibb, not Barry Gibb singing this. It's Robin who's got that kind of almost falsetto, really sort of, it breaks as well when it really is just such a delicate voice, and it just be so emotive and just beautiful. And this song, it's just, the direction of the song, it's heartbreaking, and yeah, I've literally not been able to stop listening to it. I do that if I like a song that I just fall in love with. I have it on repeat all day, and I just play it.
I think people who think they're cool, Stu, say that they don't do that, but the reality is, like, I've done that quite a lot as well.
Yeah.
Is that a way? Do you find that as a means to? Sorry, Tom, I'm hijacking your podcast here. Is that because I find that interesting how you said this about how you curate your top five issues. Like, you're sitting in the shit a bit with the song, like, because it's not uplifting you, is it? It's not giving you necessarily a solution to how you're feeling.
It's just a bit of a cuddle and just like, look, ride this out. This is going to soundtrack it. It fits how you're feeling and just indulge it a little.
Yeah, that's really important, isn't it? Because that, like, any therapist worth their salt is going to tell you to like sit with what's going on and don't try and change it and don't run away from it and just sit with it. And the first time I heard that, I was like, what do you mean sit with it? And they were like, well, put your fucking phone down for a start. Do you know what I mean? Like, we constantly distract ourselves away from these uncomfortable feelings. You're supposed to have uncomfortable feelings. That's part of like being a human, right? And if you can use a piece of music to kind of help you to ease into feeling it, that's the best way to feel your way through it and kind of get past it, I think.
Absolutely.
Molly's dad unfortunately passed away, like, just suddenly, just boom, out of the blue. And he was a music, he liked folk music. He had the longest running folk music club in North London, he'd been doing it literally 30 years. He had it not every Tuesday, and he played there. We had guests every week. And Molly just really felt her father's death. It sounds like a stupid thing to say, but when my dad passed, the first week I felt I was really processing it properly. And I was crying a lot. It was savage. But I really felt like I was processing it. And then something happened with behaviours of family members that made me have to get my fucking game head on and get shit sorted. And it kind of stopped my fucking grieving for a year, well over a year. Like, I put a stop on it and I couldn't reopen the gates properly. And what Molly did was she sat, like exactly what you said there, Tom, just sat with the feelings, and she would play his music and his recordings. And, you know, it's like, it's kind of heartbreaking because you come home after work and she's fucking crying again. No, but do you know what I mean? She's like playing her dad's music and she's properly fucking weeping. But like, without feeling that emotion, you'll never get past it. You'll never properly deal with it. So, like, I think with men as well, I'm very much like, I've spoken to Pip about this a lot as well. Like, when we hear our mates have problems, we're like, right, okay, or our girlfriends, right, here we go, let's get the solution. Well, what's bugging you? Solution number one, solution number two. It's like, they're not at the solution stage. They're at the, this is fucking shit and it's upset me and I want to get past that bit first. So, like you say, Tom, like, I'm sometimes a bit too keen to get to the solution or problem solve stage. Feel it, understand how it feels, process that sadness first before you sort of like go anywhere else. And you can still have a slight optimism, Stu, like you say with that song, like, it can be a sort of cuddle as to what's going on. It doesn't have to analyze everything you've done wrong in the relationship at that point or whatever, do you know what I mean? Or, you know, what's happened. It's interesting. I haven't heard that song, Stu, so I'll have to check it out, man.
Yeah. Let's put a little Spotify playlist together of all our choices and we can put it in the show notes so people can go and listen to all of them.
Yeah, that'd be really cool, man. Yeah, definitely. It's funny, isn't it, talking about grief, because, like, obviously grieving is a process and there's no instructions for it. And like, society doesn't always give us the chance. So if you, like you said, Chris, you can start to go through the process and then have to switch back on. And then maybe you get like an afternoon to yourself in a month's time and you think, oh, I could really do with kind of letting some of this out, but you can't get there because you've been burying it for 6 months. And like that, then you put that tune on and it just kind of like just teases it out, you know, just opens the door and you kind of go, you let that out. I lost a friend of mine, like a really, really good friend, and it was probably about 10 years ago now, and at the time I hadn't seen him for a couple of years and I was a bit like, I was in shock, and I didn't go to funeral and I felt sad, but I didn't really feel that sad. I was really like just reserved from it, and that was like years and years ago. And last year me and my wife went to see Ryan Adams in Manchester, and he plays those like really like low-key acoustic shows. It's just him with like a lamp because he can't have the bright lights on because of his medical condition, and everyone sat there, you're not allowed phones, so it's really, really intimate. And he's got a song about his brother who died, and he played this song about his brother, and I was just sat there and I just started sobbing. It was such a, like, I've never cried in public before like that in in like such an intimate setting. It was quiet, like people could have seen me, you know. And it, yeah, just something about that. He was singing about his brother. I thought about my mate, and then the song finished, and I kind of thought, oh God, that was bloody lovely. I needed that. And then we just went back to watching the gig, and it was just like a little moment of emotion that just kind of got like pinched out, and it was some like real comfort in, and exactly like Stu said, sometimes these songs are like a hug. It's just like a blanket that wraps around you and makes you feel nice for 3 minutes, I think. Makes you feel safe.
What was your one, Chris?
What shall I start with? I mean, because just even that conversation, what you just said there, Tom, inspired me on another one, which was kind of like, oh, fuck it. Shall I do this now? Because we're only doing five. Oh, no, spoilt for choice now. Where do you go? Right, so I was like, so this is one where I had processed this pain a bit, but it kind of caught me off guard. I was driving. This is an honourable mention. I'm going to do my other one, my proper one in a second. But I was driving along from home from work, from the train station, and basically a local boy in a photograph from Stereophonics came on, and like I'm not a big Stereophonic. I'll put my hands up and say, I'm not that keen on Stereophonics. Like, I like their first two records. And then after that, I kind of like, they really blew up. And I don't know if it's because I was being a snob because I was younger. And like,
no,
they
did just become shit.
Oh, they did. Okay. So it's not me. But like that that second record that's got like, think songs like, Thousand Trees and Local Boy in a Photograph. I love that. And that was like, they were like one of my favourite V festivals. I think it was 97 or 98. 98. And it was amazing. And I had that experience with my best mate. My best mate, unfortunately, was a lad who killed himself when we were 21. I was like 30 by this point. So it was years past. I'd actually gone to therapy like 5 years after that. I'd really sort of like felt it. But I remember like that song came on, Local Boy in a Photograph. It might have been Thousand Trees. It's funny how your brain can switch songs out. But in the first riff of that, so it was Thousand Trees, weirdly enough. Local Boy in a Photograph is about suicide, isn't it? It's about a lad who falls on the train tracks. But I guess your brain sort of like connects the two. And it also connected me very strongly to Jamie, very strongly to V97 or V98. And the first opening chord started, standing at the bus stop with my sharpening in my, and I fucking, it hit me, punched me around the face, Tom. And I literally pulled over and just went, and I just fucking sobbed my guts out. And it's just that opportunity, I think. I have a habit of sometimes when under duress to be able to go, I'm putting that in a box for a minute. And I can handle the pressure and I can have a very level head. I can deal with shit situations. Everyone's, oh, you deal with that fine. And I'm like, cool. But what I've got to learn to be able to do, I'm much better now as I'm older, is when the pressure's off, to let that relief go and then really be able to feel what fucking happened. And so I'll do that. Like, if I do feel that's like whatever I need to do, I was just like, fuck it, I'm pulling over and I'm just going to cry my eyes out. And like you say, Tom, if someone had driven past me, it'd have been like, what the fuck is going on in that car? Just like proper howling. And it's cathartic. I think, you know, just because you learn to live with the pain of a tragic situation.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
and doesn't mean to say it just goes. That's not most of the time. It isn't that you ever forget it. It's you learn to live with it and have a successful life with some of those things. It's possible. There's light at the end of that tunnel. And yeah, so I did. I just felt that. But that was a special mention. My actual one's going to be not crying, but a thing that I think just as good is like fucking being absolutely angry. And so there's a song by Royal Blood. Again, not all their records I'm a big fan of, but there's a song called Loose Change. It's only about 3 minutes long. You know, I don't know all. I know all the lyrics. I'm not exactly sure what their interpretation of what they're singing about is. But for me, it perfectly fit a very frustrating relationship where I love this person desperately, but they kind of, you know, they would. I felt like they had reduced everything down to the fact that they were going to be left with nothing but loose change in their pocket. Like they'd lost a great relationship. We had both. Because they're so busy penny pinching and abusing the relationship. And so it's weird. Like, I don't know. That's not probably what that song's about. That's how I see it. It's a song that is very like, it has like a change of tempo halfway through. And I used to listen to that, like you say, Stu, on repeat. And for me, that helped me in that rage, frustration part of a relationship that I had to end. And I was in love and I still had to end it. That's a horrible situation to be in where you're like, you love them, but it's toxic as fuck. And you doing it for your own self-preservation. I felt so frustrated that for me, like that song was a way of just being able to rage it out and just fucking, I listened to it on repeat whenever I needed to, just to get the anger out and just it helped define what I couldn't quite put into words about how I felt. And that ties back to what we were saying about the vocabulary, Tom, sometimes you don't have the words to describe the frustration that you feel in a relationship. So, yeah, I love it. And they said it was so hard for them to write that record. You know, said it was a real fucker to produce it. But for me, it's my favourite one of their songs. But it will immediately link to that relationship. I can't listen to it without thinking of that situation. So that's my actual pick. Even though I spoke about Stereophonics for longer.
Yeah, I mean, anger's a funny emotion, isn't it? Because, like, it's frowned. Again, all emotions are valid, and we're supposed to have the full spectrum of them, but it's almost, like, frowned upon. And I think more than anything, it's the one that if you push it down, if you don't express it, that's when it comes out, like, inappropriately, you know? Yeah. So, like, I've talked about in therapists, sometimes if I, like, overreact in family situations, I, like, shout at my kids, and then the guilt of that will fucking destroy me afterwards. And my therapist was saying, it's not the thing that they did. It's all this other thing that's, like, bubbled up, and it's just come out at the wrong moment. So, you know, a mechanism to release that through music is wonderful. I think it's why things like combat sports and stuff are so good for people. Do you know what I mean? If you can go and like welly a fucking bag or beat your mate up or choke him out or something, then it's like it's a safe way to release some of these things. I think
absolutely. We shouldn't totally rule out domestic violence, Tom. Well, I think a little bit of it is still healthy, but just not. Also, don't get caught. I guess is if we can give a decent message to this podcast. No, I completely agree, mate. I think like having a good way, like Zach De La Rocca said, anger is a gift.
John Lydon said, anger is an energy.
Yeah, and it's totally true. Like I often like the difference between me and Molly is that her go to will be sadness, and my go to is often rage, and it's like it'll be an outburst. Like when I'm doing DIY, for example, an outburst, I'll say some filthy, derogatory words to a wall. Done. I'm done. Like, I forgot about it. It's gone. And like, even though Molly might be like, you've just scared the life out of me. It's like, okay, well, I've dealt with it and I've got the job done now. Whereas sometimes sadness, I think you've got to feel it. You've got to sit in it. Both are valid feelings. But it's funny, people may lean towards one and the other. And being overly dependent on it, I know sometimes I've had an issue with rage, especially road rage. But I've learnt to much more successfully deal with it. And that song, Loose Change, in a way, like it was anger, but it also like it got it out of me. And it also reminded me of, sort of reinforced why I'd made the decision that I had. It helped me interpret the relationship in a way that made me be able to rationalise why I've had to make the decision I've made. And I don't know, it helped. Like I obviously had extreme sadness through that, but getting a bit of rage out didn't hurt. And, you know, obviously joking about the domestic violence. The idea here, right, Tom, is that if you've got a way of doing it, getting that anger out, if you can let it out in the right way and you can use anger to push you to take action that is positive, if you're getting pissed off at something, right, how do you fix it without violence? That's where anger can push you, take that energy, push it into the solution. I think it's super, super useful.
Yeah, that's a healthy outlet, right? You can burn it off in the gym, scream it at a wall, but yeah, acknowledge it. Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
What's your number five, Tom?
Or should we do this as a number three? Are we going to just do five? Because if we do like each do five, we're going to be here for like
top
15. Hours.
Yeah, I hadn't really given it much thought, to be honest. I thought I'll leave it to them two to just bring it. I've kind of had like a few ideas of things, but you talk about like songs that like your comfort song, your crying song. If I need to get a cry out, my go-to is People's Faces by Kay Tempest. That's my go-to. And I've got no idea what that song is about. You know, Kay Tempest is amazing and I like all of their work. But that song in particular, that is my go-to. If I'm stuck, if something needs to shift and I can't get it to shift, that's my put that on. It gets me every time.
When I first heard that, I was walking through London. And then I carried on walking and I just had it on loop. And there's a pause where they say, is it there's so much love in people's faces? Is it love? There's so much. I can't think what it is. But they pause and it's just that whole less is more thing in music where sometimes you think, right, this is the poignant part of the song, let's drop them strings in, let's make it, and just the little gap and the breath gives it the gravitas, and what a fucking record that is.
Yeah,
there's so much peace to be found in people's faces.
That's the one.
And sometimes like songs, like when you hear it at the time you think, oh, it's got me, and then maybe over time the effect wears off slightly as it goes, you know. But that one for me, it doesn't matter. Like, you put it on now, like, please don't, but you could put it on now and I would go. It's just like, it just sits in my soul somehow. Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful piece of music. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
good shout, Tom. With Stewie,
I'm gonna go for a song that everybody knows, and I heard it when I was very young when I watched the film Grease. And it doesn't matter how many times I hear it, it absolutely just crushes me. And it's Hopelessly Devoted to You by Olivia Newton-John. I think it's a masterpiece. I think her vocal is fucking incredible. I don't know who wrote it. I should know that. I should find out. But yeah, I just think it's just got a big chorus, and I think it was probably one of the first songs I ever heard that made me just think, oh, it's not just sounds, it's like there's levels to this. And I think probably one of them was probably the first song that I think done that, and it still does that to this day, you know, 50 years later.
You'd have been proper young, right, when you heard that, so...
Yeah, well, it came out in... When did Grease come out? 77, so I would have been, what, 35? so I'm going to go Hopelessly Devoted to You by Olivia Newton-John.
Is that something that you listen to? Is that a relationship? Like, say, for example, Loose Change for me is a sort of like more... Is Hopelessly Devoted to You a go-to in a relationship, sort of like when you're thinking about that sort of stuff, or... Can you listen to it for other things when you want to?
Yeah, I've got songs that remind me of heartbreak, like You and Me, Somebody I Wanna Die Is I Can't Listen To. And it's one of the most joyous pop songs ever written.
Yeah.
And I have to play it in my club, but it just, yeah, there's something about that. It just wins me a little bit. I don't necessarily sort of, obviously, I've not, you know, had my heart broken for a long time, and And yeah, but I don't. Now I'm thinking about it. Do you know what? I'll move on because I'll be here forever just rattling off songs like that.
Well, I totally agree about the You and Me song though. Like it is like super uplifting, but it can wind you. Us by Regina Spektor does that to me as well. It's such a beautiful. Her voice in that is just fucking. It's incredible, and it's so wistful about love and the greatness of love and how great it can be and how it can stand the test of time. It's fucking great, man. But within that can also be melancholy, or it can highlight the absence of it in instances, or, you know. So, yeah, oh, that's interesting, Shu.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated by songs that are upbeat that are really, really sad. It's like all Northern Soul songs, right? So people are you're dancing to it, and then you listen to the words, and it's like, oh, right, he's like divorced and he hasn't seen his kids. And it's like, it's so upsetting. And there's something about that, the happiness and the sadness within it, that's just like, it's almost like your brain can't handle it. It's like two contrasting things.
I shared our hardcore listening episode this week, which we would talk about monsters with Carla Valentine. And when I did the music on the Instagram post, I put Ghost in My House by Dean Taylor, the Northern Soul classic. And it's one of the best songs to dance to ever. But everybody thinks it's just a song about ghosts. There's a ghost in my house since you left, and it's her ghost. And it's like, it's just heartbreak. And it's like, but all of them Motown songs, all of them Northern Soul songs, they're all so fucking tragic and laced in heartbreak. But they're just the most joyous pop ditties, you know, out there.
Yeah, it's a skill to that, right? A real art in writing it, I always think, to write something.
How can you write a really upbeat song, you know, that finishes with, you know, if a 10-ton, you know, bus crashes into us to die by your side, he's such a, you know, but he's got these beautiful melodic upbeat strings, and it's just this joyous, you know, I will just get my nod into the Smiths now. They've done that perfectly. Songs that were just so miserable, like lyrically, but joyous musically, you know, that's hard to do and get that right.
I completely agree. I don't think the brain is this binary thing where it's either, you know, it's either happy or sad. Like these words, like happy and sad, they're two things that we've humans have made up and studied, but it never perfectly encapsulates what you're feeling all at one time.
Yeah.
Like if you could be, if you're sad about a breakup, right? Let's say you just use that one. It's a simple one. You're sad about a breakup because you split up with her, but you know also there was something sweet to begin with. For you to be sad now, there must have been something sweet to begin with, because if you didn't like them, you wouldn't be upset about it. So there you have, like, you're trying to hold, your brain actually is holding two emotions at the same time, and something that you might not be able to vocabulize to your mates either, but you listen to that Northern Soul record and you're like, oh right, it's kind of helping me process this in a way that I maybe can't quite explain. Often because we're not smart enough to understand our own emotions. Like, you know, how many of us have got, like, you know, degrees in psychology, and, you know, it's really interesting, Stu.
Yeah, it's cool, mate. I wasn't expecting something from Greece to come up today. I'll definitely definitely say that. That kind of like jumped into my head as well when you're talking about that. It's when you hear, and I always think about this, Stu, when I listen to Off the Beaten Track, and you ask that question about the emotional impact, because probably the first songs that I remember making me feel emotional would have been songs that I wouldn't particularly think now were very good. And I would have been at an age where I hadn't really experienced any emotions. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it would have been something on the radio like Meatloaf or Bryan Adams or one of those big ballads.
Mate.
And they're singing about, like, oh, you know, I'd do anything for love. And I'd have been like eight and I'd never been in love, right? But I remember feeling the weight of those songs at the time, you know?
That song in particular, Tom, I'll literally mirror. So when that came out, I would have been 12-ish. And I'd started senior school. I hadn't really experienced love. I had one of my first authentic, real crushes on a girl. I'll say that. And that's about as much as I could draw a comparison. Not in terms of the depth of that ballad. But I felt the full force of it, even if I couldn't quite empathise with the situation, you know.
Yeah, it's a weird, funny, weird thing. Yeah. I used to put on History by the Verve over and over and over again and get all emotional too. I'd never had a girlfriend.
That's really interesting you say that, right? So around that time when the Verve released A Northern Soul, that record, and Spiritualized released Ladies and Gentlemen, We're Floating in Space, them two records soundtracked my first proper heartbreak. I can't listen to any of them albums anymore. I have to be in the right headspace to listen to them. And I love both them records.
Yeah.
But there's a weight to them that... They're winter records, in my opinion, anyway. They're not summer songs. Mm. And I just have to be... I've got a note to mention them two bands in here, as they're the two albums that I can't play unless I really am in the right mood for it, because there's just that strange weight attached to them.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and they're heavy fucking records.
Thanks for all that enjoyment. I loved you, but I've attached. I used to talk to Pip about this a lot, but it's so entwined with a relationship that is like that made that relationship great. It is also what makes it so hard to fucking
It rips
that those feelings open straight away, doesn't it?
Yeah,
and you're just like, oh, and that's a nice tenuous link into my next one. So I can't remember the record that Sage Francis said that, but there's a line where he basically says, "I thought time's a good healer, but when I saw you again, I don't know." He has a go at time for basically saying that's fucking savagely not the case, because as soon as I saw you, it ripped the wound open straight away. That's not what the song I'm talking about, but it is a Sage Francis song that I'm talking about. So about 2005, I started getting really back into hip hop and more the underground scene in London, and you know, record labels like Def Jux and all that shit. And Sage Francis became my number one, like, probably rapper of all time. And between him and Saul Williams. But he released a song called Inherited.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Cars. And it's... I didn't know at that point. I guess for me, it's the one where I'd say, like, does rap have to be about whatever I grew up with? So I grew up with Ice Cube, Cypress Hill, and then just like anyone on Rap Attack, De La Soul. And again, like a lot of the stuff that Cypress Hill were rapping about, I couldn't in any way, shape, or form relate to. But for some reason, I could in other ways. I take other learnings from Ice Cube songs, applied them to my life, even though it was completely such a stark contrast.
You got up to speed with Cypress Hill by the time you got to college, though, didn't you?
You're going to keep digging me out, Gordon? Well, we're just smoking weed. Yeah. I remember listening to Hits from the Bong and like going, oh, that's what being stoned must sound like. What? What's that even mean? It means nothing, mate. But you're 12 and you've got no other reference. So
yeah.
I guess that does make sense to a 12-year-old who's never been stoned. But like, Sage Francis was the first person when I started listening to his lyrics. I'm like, it's about real world things. And it's done in such deep, deep ways that even now, like the writing on The Inherited Scars, I just feels like godlike. It's like so out of touch with what I could ever write. It feels so alien to me. Someone's capable of writing in depth like that. And it's basically about his relationship with his sister and the experiences they had with their, maybe with their parents, and about how actually, and the chorus is, if I could have been there from the beginning, if I could be there right now, if I could promise to be there when you need me, would it raise an eyebrow? How would your body be different if I still drop by for visits? Is it my place to put a smile on your face? And then it goes on about the idea of inherited scars is, not, for me, is like that she'd hurt her skin and she tattooed herself, and it's from pain that she'd experienced from their upbringing, and how maybe he could have interjected with that at points over there as they grew up, and how appropriate at points it would have been to do that and not. It's just a really deep song, and I listened to that, and at the time, again, like, I didn't really have a means to relate that to many things, I guess, but I felt it, and actually, in ways, it has taught me. It's a sit in the shit song for me, but it's also a sort of before we were talking a lot about mental health, like in 2004, whatever. It was a discussion over mental health and how to consider the pros and cons of, you know, when do you need to reach out, and don't delay it too long, and don't be quiet about it. Don't suffer in silence. It might help to talk to someone about it. Yeah, it's incredible. It's really like, it's got like a, you could almost call it a winter song yourself, Shu. I sort of understand what you mean by that. And it ends with sort of like a recording of those two when they were younger, that obviously their mum or dad managed to catch on tape. And I don't know, I love it. Like, I've cried to it a lot, but I feel like I've learned from it, strangely. I learned from his situation in terms of how to maybe approach helping friends if they are sometimes in need as well. So yeah, this has more of a, like, even though it's based on a story and his sister's experience, it also kind of was like a blueprint for helping myself or others, maybe if they've got things in the past that they need to process, or things that they're happening to them now that they need to process. So yeah, well done, Sage Francis. I'd recommend everyone give that one a listen,
mate. That's a nice touch, putting like a voice recording at the end. Do you know what I mean? Like, that, it's like when you see a film that's based on a true story and they like flash the picture of the real person at the end, and you kind of like, it just drives it home, doesn't it?
Yeah,
you know, like,
yeah,
that's a nice way to make it real, right? To make it, oh, like, these are real people, real thoughts, real things, yeah, written down, man. That's sick. I like that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
amazing. Should we got a happy one? Should we do a happy one? Anyone got a happy one?
Yeah.
Stu, you got any uplifting ones, mate? You want to talk?
Yeah.
About?
Jimmy Cliff. I can see clearly now.
Oh,
nice. I can see clearly now. The rain has gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's going to be a bright, sunshiny day. And I remember my mate Keith, who passed away, he said to me once that he'd got divorced, his wife had left him, and he decided that he would move out and try and do the right thing, and basically she stitched him up, and he lost everything, and he had to sort of build his life back up again and try and get back on the property ladder, and he did, and he just said to me once, he said, I was just driving along, and this come on the radio, and it just snapped me out of something, and it just gave me a proper rainbow, and was like, okay, this is, and that resonated with me. And whenever I hear that, most people will probably know it from like Cool Runnings and things like that. But obviously, it's a massive Jimmy Cliff record. Who's Jesus Christ, has got so many incredible records. But yeah, I can see clearly now. I think it's a real upbeat, you know, kind of jaunty, scar, almost reggae, almost scary kind of, you know, it's got that sort of skank to it. Just a brilliant pop song. Yeah, that's my happy one, I think. And to throw an honourable mention in as well, just ridiculous, because it's the song that whenever I hear it gives me pure joy, and it's We Don't Have to Take Our Clothes Off to Have a Good Time by Jermaine Stewart.
Great.
Which is a fucking great pop record, and whenever I hear it, and I just hear that Not a Word from Your Lips, like, I just think, oh, we're in for a really happy ride now. This is the next 3 minutes is just really great, and pop music's brilliant for that, and that's one that I can, you know, trace back to being probably around 10 or 11, and just thinking, this is brilliant, you know, there's not even such a thing as cherry wine, but he's singing about it. And and obviously I was fascinated at the concept of it. It's called We Don't Have to Take Our Clothes Off to Have a Good Time, and I didn't really understand what he was talking about.
I did, like, from you know, I heard it about
is
eight
he going swimming?
I'd already lost my virginity.
Or he disagreed with it.
Well, what about you, Glasson?
Oh, I'm going to say one that you'll hate. Probably. Reef. You a fan of Reef Stew?
Not really, no.
I knew you wouldn't be.
I did have Jack on the podcast, and he was lovely. Yeah. He was so nice. He's got a serious beard as well.
Is he? Yeah, I fucking... That record, was it Glow?
Second one, well, yeah.
To be fair, I thought Replenish was fucking amazing too, to be fair.
First CD I ever bought, first record I ever bought. Yeah.
Mate, I'd love to find my copy of that. That was
Did you go and see him when they played the Tangate on that record?
Oh no, I didn't. Unless I did, and I can't remember.
Because they got famous for the mini disc advert. Naked was on that.
Yeah.
And on that first tour.
It was Naked, wasn't it?
Yeah. And they played the Tangate in Basildon.
Shit. No, I didn't see that. And that mini-disc advert came out, and then mini-disc still took about another 2 years to take off, and then they got fucking crushed by MP3s. But my mini-disc player is, to me, that's the epitome of any technology I'll ever own. Right? You could run around with that. You could skip tracks. I nicked my one, as we've told on the story. I nicked like a £200 mini-disc. There's good reason for that, Tom, but I'm not going to explain it any further than that. You guests will just have to, your listeners will have to think I'm a piece of shit. But like I had Reef on a mini disc, and I thought Replenish was ace, and Glow was amazing, and there was a song on Glow called Summer's in Bloom, and to me that was fun because it's like you don't have to do a lot, like as I say with songs like Loose Change or any hip hop I was listening to at 14 where they're talking about drive bys, and I'm somehow managing to relate that to my own life. Like it wasn't so hard to relate at like whatever 21 whatever. Whenever Glow came out, but what that Summer in Bloom is obviously quite easy to interpret that as an uplifting. Yes, okay, it's time to have a really good time and enjoy yourself. And yeah, I don't know. It's just always been a feel good thing. I think it's got a slow start, but I don't know. It's just foreshadowing that it's going to be a big song, and it's just a happy song for me. Weirdly, I haven't listened to it in. I probably haven't played that song for 5 years. But I don't know, that's the one that came to mind.
I thought you was leading us up to say Consideration by Reef. I thought that's what was coming.
Amazing.
Because that whole crescendo of it's going to be all right. I thought that's where he's going with this.
So weird, isn't it? The different songs speak to you. Yeah. And, you know.
They had some tunes, man. Reef, they were sick. And then they disappeared for a while, and they come back, and they cut all their hair off, and were wearing like Reebok Classics and Ben Shermans, and they did an album that wasn't quite as good. But they're still at it, aren't they, man? And I think there can't be many songs that wouldn't be improved by Gary Stringer popping up and going, "All right, now," just like randomly, that you know, like Dr. Dre's got a "Hell Yeah," and Gary Stringer's got a "All right, now."
For a while, I think they've got. Have they got Ronnie Wood's or someone's son in Reef now?
I think it is Ronnie Wood's son, mate. I think, yeah.
And then up until maybe a year ago, they had. I've got to get it right. Not Roger. Or was it Roger? Roger Taylor from Duran Duran was in Reef. Like, it's quite. Yeah, they got quite the lineup. And. They're back and they're at it, and I mean they've got some classic indie dance floor stompers, haven't they? And
you're too cool for it though, Stu.
I don't like riffs, Chris. That's why I don't like bloody Loose Change.
Don't like riffs, mate. Don't fucking shit in my heart. You could have kept that.
I'm surprised you ain't mentioned Queens of the Stone Age.
Yeah, do you know what? It's so funny that like. Yeah, they've got certain songs, I guess, that I could argue would be on that track. But weirdly, I don't use them as much for that as I do just good old-fashioned, being happy, rocking out. Weird. So one other happy one, which is a bit of a curveball, because it's confusing in that sense, but it is a more heavy song, is Nirvana's Lithium, which obviously Lithium is something you would take for certain, like, you know... if you need. It's for depression, isn't it, lithium? And I think the people with bipolar maybe sometimes take it as well. This is all guesswork.
Yeah, no, I think I have heard that. Yeah, I spoke to someone about it.
But the lyrics in that, like, I've sung them a dozen times, and like a lot of the Nirvana ones, especially because when I got into Nirvana, I wasn't so much always breaking down. I don't suppose I've done that a lot with songs. I interpret them how I want, and I leave them at that. I'm not one for bookishly reading up the meanings of a band's lyrics. I prefer guesswork, Stu. And absolutely. And Lithium, to me, is a very happy song. But lyrically, it's experiences with a girlfriend and maybe confessions they might have been involved in the death of someone and actually then finding God. And Kurt's, when I've weirdly looked at it this morning, Kurt's sort of explanation for that song is understanding that life could be maybe meaningless, but maybe a little sample of what in aspects of heaven could be like and feeling good in that way in a world where nothing really matters. And I weirdly, without reading that, I don't know, I've always found Lithium, despite the lyrics being a bit having mixed meanings, is still an uplifting rock song. I don't know why, but yeah, it came to mind.
I mean, that,
and I have used it as that in the past as well.
Yeah, that kind of grunge era and a lot of like really big rock bands and stuff. I always find now, looking back on some of these bands, these songs, whatever, through the lens of mental health, quite shocking. Because I, as a kid growing up, I listened to all these records, I read all the books, I watched all the documentaries, and I loved the rock and rollness of it. I loved the drugs and the booze and the stories and all this sort of stuff. And now I look at it and I go, oh yeah, look, you were all like mentally ill. You guys were like... Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I was thinking about it the other day because like Duff McKagan's just brought a new record out, and it is impossible for anyone to mention Duff McKagan without saying that his pancreas exploded from drinking too much vodka. Yeah. And I've just read an interview with him on I think it was on the Guardian website, and he talks about that he drank so much because he had a panic disorder. And you think, oh, that's why he blew his pancreas up, because he had like awful anxiety. And but I never thought, I was like, oh, Duff McKagan, God, he drank so much. Did you hear about his pancreas? Oh, it's amazing. You know, like, it's just these folklore, and then you look at it through the lens of mental health, and you go, oh man, that's not well. They didn't need another tour. They needed a hug and a lot of time off.
But you look at these people, and you know, and we talk about that era, and you talk about Duff, and I can't remember what the singer's name was. Pre Pearl Jam, not Green River, in
Andrew Woods.
Andrew, yeah. And so Andrew, Chris Cornell, Lane Stanley, Scott Weiland, obviously was in Stone Temple Pilots, and then obviously was in a band with Duff. And all of these people, you know, were kind of revered, and Kurt obviously were you know, these kind of, not so much Kurt, but there's lots of rock and roll behaviour that's kind of encouraged and nurtured and marketed, and ultimately these are emotional people that are trying to express themselves, you know, in a very bananas industry, and these ones were the lucky ones that got fortune and fame. I mean, fucking hell, how you navigate your way through that.
I think it is pure fucking luck.
Yeah.
Because our brains are so... I've always joked about that. Like, if I could sing, I'd be dead. If I could sing, I'd be dead, 100%. Because I would have got... I'm so impressionable. And I'm such a dirtbag, you know. I just wouldn't have survived it. Like, the lure of sex and drugs and rock and roll, I would have never made it out. So it's fucking lucky I can't sing. It's lucky that I'm absolutely talentless in every way, shape or form. Like, I'm so grateful that there's nothing to me. Like, I'm barren, bereft. Because, like, yeah, it's like, how do you do... Because, like, I do get the rock and roll thing. I've got sucked into it. Like you said, Tom, like, it's really cool, the ideology of being able to live your life vicariously. Yeah, you know what? They're out there doing it. If it's not me, I'm glad it's them. How did you hear they did this? And you hear, like, you read the autobiographies of, like, you know, Slash and that, and he's, you know, they're all getting laid in a room, and he's pulling out, and he's accidentally coming on fucking Axel's leg or something. And then they're like, we need to get a bigger room. And it's like, that sounds amazing. And then actually the reality is they had a skill. They got thrown into something insane. No human being is ever prepared to equip to deal with this. Look at the Amy Winehouses. Look at the fucking Beatles, for God's sake. It destroys you mentally. And And then you get access to drugs. Yeah, you might have written some great songs on it, but also, like you say, Tom, there is a heavy bill to pay, and that bill often is death or a short lifespan. I mean, we've seen Matt died this week, Chandler. Have I got his name right? I was going to say Matthew Perry. Please say it's Matthew Perry and I haven't got it wrong. Because that'll be the next one everyone's laughing me at for getting wrong. I mean, like, he lived a rock star lifestyle just as a comic. But why was he doing all those things? He was funny, but he was having absolute panic attacks all the time because he was worried about making sure that on the set of Friends, his lines got the biggest laugh because he was supposed to be seen as the more classically funny one. And like, fucking hell, it can wreck you. So it's weird that you want to live vicariously through people. Think, yeah, look at them. They're living this lifestyle. And it's like, well, if you live that lifestyle, you know, that they could be demons they could be demons just doing all of that. And you could be medicating because you can't handle it. You can't process it.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, it's interesting, Tom.
Yeah, it's a funny, you'd look at the world differently, I think, when you look at it through a lens of mental health and mental illness. Yeah. Guys, I think are we there? We did five there. That was...
We did five?
We got five.
I want to throw my number one in.
Oh, mate, go for it. Go for it.
That's all right. And it's about mental health as well. And it's a song that most people know. And it's not sung by the guy who's the lead singer in The Cars. It's not sung by him. It's sung by another member of the band. And are you familiar with Drive by The Cars? You know, who's going to drive you home tonight? And I always thought that was a love song. And it was only when someone said, no, this is about someone whose mental health is not where they want it to be. And when you know that and you listen to it, like, oh my God, yeah, that record. And that record, for me, takes me back for the first time I see somebody move to tears with music. And there was, during Live Aid, David Bowie comes on stage and introduces this kind of short film about showing the famine and the children that were dying in Ethiopia at the time. And it was soundtracked by Drive by The Cars. And I remember seeing my mum and my aunt just sobbing. And I was like... And I could tell that it was because of what they were seeing. Mm. But it was then I really noticed that putting the right music with the right images takes things to a completely different level and just, you know, opens your heart up even wider, mm-hmm. you know, to feel the, you know, the sorrow and pain of what you're looking at. And I'd urge people to go and listen to that track because it is just a perfect record. I would say it's in my top five records of all time. I think it's a perfect single.
Amazing. What a wonderful choice. Nice. I had no idea that song was about about that.
Yeah. So
there you go.
Good shout, mate. And very, very specific to this top five as well. It ticks all the boxes.
Yeah, very much so. Anything you want to throw in, Chris, before we...
I listen to a lot of miserable shit. Like, a lot of my electronic music, I listen to a lot of dark electronic ambient stuff. And a lot of people are like, that sounds really sad. And it probably is. And I'm quite happy such a fucking oxymoronic thing to say. I'm quite happy with sadness. Like, I'm quite okay, I'm quite familiar with it, and I don't feel panicked by it, and I quite like melancholy. Like, songs, I remember playing, one of my mates was like, oh, let's do song for song, and I played Rabbit in the Headlights, which was Uncle with Tom York. And my mate was like, why are you playing this shit to me? And I was like, isn't it a banger? And he's like, no, it's awful. I don't know, I really kind of enjoy morose music, and I don't even listen to it in as a means to like have to always sit in the shit or process my feelings. I don't know. I quite like those more somber songs, and it doesn't mean I wouldn't say that I'm known for being a fucking, you know, someone who's dour or sad. Mm. You know, and I'm crying on the inside, Stu. So yeah, but bands like Lorne I've spoke about, but Uncle probably started that for me.
Yeah.
Science Fiction, that's haunting. That's a winter record, I'd say.
It really is a winter record. That's a great show.
Yeah.
Can I do a couple of honourable mentions? Is that all right?
Mm.
Tom's like, I've got fucking shit. I've got shopping being delivered in a minute. Can I get
all it is, I will
not at all. Not at all. I've fucking opened this can of worms, and I'll deal with the consequences.
Any more? Yes.
Well, I will do a Spotify playlist. But I wanted to shout out Karen Carpenter because I think she's got a voice be any sadder. It just smacks of sadness, and when you know the story of Karen Carpenter. And so Rainy Days and Mondays always get me down. Fucking hell, that is a sad song. The Misconception That Everybody Hurts by REM is a sad song when it's Take Comfort in Your Friends, Hold On, and it's all about the positives of reaching out to people. But I can't ever see beyond Dwight York sitting in the car park of the office and just blaring it out on repeat in his car.
Or Dwight Schrute, even, because I don't think the former Manchester United striker Dwight York was
in it. Dwight York?
You done a fucker.
No.
You fucked up, Dwight York.
Oh, no. There's a track by Frankie Valli about his daughter that passed away called My Eyes Adored You. And if anybody that goes to watch Jersey Boys or has watched the film Jersey Boys, whew, that song will fucking crush ya. And my last one is by Soft Cell and was covered by David Gray as well on was it White Ladder, his big album? Yeah, Sail O Wave Goodbye, which is a fucking beautiful, beautiful record. I'd lean heavily on the Soft Cell version, but yeah.
That's a sick song. I actually like his cover version, but yeah,
it's great.
That's a sick version. Yeah. I one of my favorite bands ever is a band called Augustines. They used to be called We Are Augustines. Now to change the name, and I've been lucky enough to have the singer from Augustines, Bill McCarthy, on my show, and there he's had like what a life he's had and what a life the band have had, and it's seeped in mental health. Bill lost both his mum and his brother to suicide, and a lot of that was going on when they were trying to make the first record. And they just had, there's a documentary about them that like has to be watched. It's incredible. And they had, if it could go wrong, it went wrong for that band, you know. And they got down to their last legs. All these horrible things were happening in Bill's personal life, and they managed to get their debut album out, and it blew, and it kind of like, you know, it gave them everything that they were looking for. But their songs are like stunning for like pick me up songs, because that's what was happening to them when they were writing these songs. They had hell going on and they were fighting to make this record, and it's all about like keeping going. And they're a band that I go to. They got a song called This Is Your Life, and there's a refrain in it. They're big choruses, big stompy kick drum, repetitive noise, you know. And there's a line in that, and he says, "Knock me down, my friend, and I'll just get back up again." And he says it again and again and again, and it gets louder and faster and louder and faster, and it's just like bomb, you just go. That's my pull me out of a hole tune.
What tune's that called, mate?
It's called This Is Your Life by Augustines. And it's one of those, you know, the really amazing songs that it sounds like one thing when it starts, and by the time it ends you're like, you are not what just started, right? It just takes you somewhere. It's stunning, and they've got a few of those, so they're wonderful. And I think they're about to come back. He put on his Instagram story that they're in the studio, so I think they're after about like 8 or 9 years. But so that's good. And to talk about modern, recent music, there's an album that came out last week by Angie McMahon, and that's very mental health orientated. She talks a lot about sort of healing and struggle and coming off antidepressants, and it's the best thing I've heard in years. Like, I always found when I was younger, everything I listened to, I felt like they were writing about me. Like, I identified with every single band in the fucking, that was in the NME. And then as I've got older, I find that less and less that I have that connection, you know. But this album, I felt...
Angie
McMahon. Yeah, the album's called Light, Dark, Light Again. She's an Australian. It's her second album. She's an Australian musician. And it is an incredible record. So, yeah, if anyone's looking for like newer music, and that only came out Friday... the song on that is called Letting Go, was one of the singles. And the first time I heard that, it was like, oh, it makes me want to, like, I live right near the beach. And it's like, it makes me want to go down the beach and just, like, run around in circles and jump off the rocks. And then I saw the video, and that's exactly what she's doing in the video. She's spinning around on the beach. Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah.
Wow.
It's a wicked record. Yeah, really, really good. So they're my honourable mentions. There we go.
Well, fellas, can you email me your song picks, and then I'll put together a little Spotify playlist so people can go and listen to everything that we've been chatting about.
That would be lovely.
Stu won't put Loose Change on there, but because he hates it, you have to find out yourself.
Well, you're talking about putting songs on repeat. You have to your own playlist, Chris, and just have Loose Change like 25 times. Do it that way. But guys, it's always a pleasure. I fucking love hanging out with you two. And thank you so much for joining me today. And
our pleasure.
Yeah, we seem to do it about every 6 months, so I'll probably see you about sort of March, April next year, probably.
Always up for it, mate. Always a pleasure.
Nice one, guys. Take care.
See you later. Thank you.
Is that a real ending or is it like a fake podcast ending?